This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and it is currently the 22nd of July 2010 in the United States, where I'm joined on the line by Lieutenant Eric Schein, a graduate of the United States Merchant Marine Academy at Kings Point, and an expert on the history of the U.S. Merchant Marines, who operates a website at martiallaw911.com and hosts In the Zone, a radio program broadcast Sundays at 2 p.m. Central on RBN. Lieutenant Schein, thank you for joining me today on the program.
Thanks a lot, James. And the other website, too, is www.crossingtherubicon.org. And the purpose of both sites, and especially crossingtherubicon.org, it's a newer site, it gets into the issue of what was outlawed in the Roman Republic and or what eventually became the Roman Empire in allowing the military, and especially the legionnaires, to enter into the public commons wearing their uniforms or as, representatives of the military. And it was actually made punishable. This is 2,500 years ago. They understood what it meant to a republic or a system of self-governance to have the military come in and take over civilian jurisdictions or civilian authorities. And they made it punishable by death for any military personnel that came over and crossed the Rubicon, which is a river in northern Italy. And here in the United States, we've made it unlawful as well, to where for each violation, it's a two-year prison term or a $10,000 fine. And that is my core issue, especially here with the Coast Guard and the Department of Homeland Security, where they have, quote-unquote, you know, virtually speaking, crossed the Rubicon. And they're actually claiming that they are now a special branch of military, because it is special in the fact by what they are claiming, that they can administer civilian affairs, that they can police civilian affairs as a branch of military, they can regulate civilian affairs as a branch of military, and thus they can even adjudicate civilian affairs in these mock or admiralty or military tribunal proceedings or trials within the Coast Guard that are clearly, they are military tribunals, but they're carrying on and bringing charges against and civil complaints against civilians and thus making civilian law as this quote-unquote special branch of military.
Exactly right, exactly. So, and crossing the Rubicon, of course, referring to Julius Caesar in 49 BC, crossing that river and thus, yes, as you say, breaking longstanding Roman law and really instituting a type of martial law in the Roman Republic that had not existed
right,
before.
Right, it ended up being a military dictatorship.
Exactly. So that was the sign that for everyone who was in the Roman Republic that something had changed fundamentally. And as you say, there are now signs that the Rubicon has long since been crossed by a number of different things, but also the Coast Guard and its newfound role as a special branch of the military in the Department of Homeland Security. But perhaps before we start to get into that subject itself, it would be beneficial to establish your background and your credentials for the listeners out there so they get a better idea of who you are and where you're coming from.
Well, I'm a graduate of United States Merchant Marine at Merchant Marine Academy at Kings Point, as you mentioned. It's in New York. It's one of the four, and I used to say five until I became better versed on these topics. It's one of the four U.S. federal military service academies in conjunction with West Point, which is for the military, Annapolis, which is for the Navy, the Air Force Academy, and then Kings Point, where I come out of Kings Point as a naval officer, commissioned naval officer, initially as an ensign, serving on special duty in the United States Merchant Marine. I am supposed to be the eyes and the ears for the Navy, and in the event of a natural catastrophe, a declaration of war, or other incident or event that is so deemed by either Congress or the President, my naval commission is then activated, and I act as a liaison on board as a naval officer, and the vessel would come under, even if I'm a junior ranking, you know, engineering officer on board, by defect and default, the vessel would come under my command and authority through the Navy as its liaison or, you know, person on board. And then the ship would be come under naval command with orders issued from the Department of Navy. And then, and usually this would be done, like if there was a declaration of war, to get the vessel, say it's an oil tanker and we need the oil or fuel, or it's a container ship, to get it initially to safe harbor. So that in the event of a war, or say something like a tsunami, we could not lay claim to these vessels. But if there's an issue, especially such as war, these assets that we would need to prosecute and win the war would be there when we need them.
Exactly. Okay, so that sort of sets the background a little bit, but I know you have some disturbing information about the Coast Guard specifically and how it's being touted as a special branch of the military with power to exercise military authority over civilians. So in order to set the background for that, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about the beginnings of the Coast Guard and the actual four branches of the military.
Well, let me interject real quick, too, is that service in the United States Merchant Marine as a civilian is directly tied to my naval commission, to where I get consideration. If I advance my license as a civilian mariner, that goes towards advancements with my naval commission as well. The two are inextricably intertwined. I'm not in the Coast Guard, never served in the Coast Guard. And as you said, I have some specific and particular experience with this because the Coast Guard has been prosecuting me since 2003 within a military tribunal, one of these military or admiralty courts that they've set up, as an alleged civilian, not as a naval officer. But I also wanted to throw in that my father went to West Point, my brother went to West Point, graduated, and as my uncle did, he graduated from Annapolis. So we have a long and storied history of both federal and military service in my family. I'm not the first person to serve, in such a position. And so I have, my father also worked for federal contractors like General Dynamics for about 30 years. He worked at Groton, at Electric Boat. I've worked for General Electric as a civilian project manager and was trained on federal contracting. I've also been a civil service port engineer for the Navy, for Naval Fleet Auxiliary Force, Military Sealift Command, and other commands and authorities, both as a civilian and as a naval officer. So I'm very well versed on not only the issue of Title 10, UCMJ, who and what the Coast Guard is supposed to be, but also federal contracting that gets into a lot of, you know, why the Coast Guard has come after me. But what the Coast Guard is saying now, since at least or minimally 2003, that the war was launched in March or on or about between March 18th and March 22nd of 2003. Homeland Security was just created at that time. The Coast Guard moved from the Department of Transportation, not the Department of Defense, but the Department of Transportation into the Department of Homeland Security, into the newly created Department of Homeland Security. And when it did, it began to declare that it is and has always been since 1915 a branch of military that is not bound by posse comitatus, that is not bound by Title V, which is the Administrative Procedure Act that they're trying to use to carry on these military tribunals of civilians here in the United States, that they are not bound or prohibited by Title 10, which is the Department of Defense, it's military law. Title 10 incorporates and encapsulates everything within the Department of Defense that is in the military, whether it be the Air Force, the Army, the Navy, the Marine Corps. The Coast Guard is not in or under the Department of Defense. It never has been. In World War II, it had been brought under the Department of Defense, under the Department of Navy. And at that point in time, it was actually the Department of War. We, didn't form the Department of Defense until after the war. So it was brought into the Department of War. And when it was, it actually became part of the United States Navy. So it was bound by the same codes of conduct as was the Navy in the war. After the war, because of what happened prior to the war, from the Coast Guard's inception from 1915 up to about 1945, the Coast Guard had repeatedly tried to impose itself as a self-perceived or self-defined branch of military upon civilians here in the United States. Congress held hearings in 1946 and 1947 on this particular issue. The Coast Guard finally admitted, they had admirals come in and testify before Congress, that indeed it was not a branch of military. It was only organized along military lines, meaning that they had a chain of command, that they were uniformed, that they had weapons, that they had sergeants and lieutenants and, as we well know, admirals. But they were not a quote-unquote branch of military. They did not branch off of either the Navy, which is one of our constitutional, you know, branches of the military, or the Army. The Army is under, or it used to be under Article 1, and it was to be controlled by Congress and the purse strings of Congress. But in 47, the National Military, it was, I think the acronym is NME, the National Military Establishment, was used to marry Article 1 and Article 2, which would be the military and the Navy, together. The Navy was set up to be Article 2 as controlled by the President so that it would, quote-unquote, repel an invasion of the United States, and that he was on, you know, duty 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, where Congress, especially at that time, did not meet and convene as much, or nowhere near, as it does today. The Coast Guard, rather than being placed in the Department of Defense at this time and under Title 10 and under the Uniform Code of Military Justice that was made uniform to apply to all men and women in uniform only, and as applied by men and women in uniform, you know, of the same branch, so that Navy personnel were carrying on adjudications over other Navy personnel for infractions that they had carried on when they were in uniform, you know, in the Navy. And the military would do the same thing, Army doing the Army, the Marine Corps doing the Marine Corps. The Title 10 is also called the Uniform Code of Military Justice, not just because it applies to men and women in uniform, but it was made uniform so that it was the same body of law, military law, which is a form of martial law, that only applied to all of the different branches of military, but it was applied equally so that if you were in the Army, you were getting the same system and same application of law that someone in the Navy would get. In there, within Title 10 and also in Title 18, which is criminal code, it has been made unlawful for any military personnel to use military assets against American civilians, you know, going back to quote-unquote crossing the Rubicon. But what the Coast Guard has done since its inception in 1915, and even since after World War II when this was corrected, you know, in the most egregious and most outstanding form, the Coast Guard after World War II was placed under Title 14, separate and apart from all of the other four regular branches of military, because it's not a branch of military. It is a civil service agency. It is a federal maritime civil service agency, not a branch of military. But these federal contractors and others within the military industrial complex have moved to militarize the Coast Guard. They'd actually been over the years using the Coast Guard and training it under the UCMJ and Title 10 in the event of a declared war, so that if they came under the Navy and under the Department of Defense, they would know the codes of conduct that they would then come under if they were placed in the Navy and moved. And that, you know, that usually had to be on a voluntary basis to take a civil service personnel or a public, you know, public servant and ask them to go serve in the military. It would have to be on a voluntary basis. Say, do we have anyone that wants to volunteer for this assignment? And then they would move these personnel into the United States Navy. They would become an attachment or detachment to the United States Navy and be treated as if they were in the United States Navy. This was one of the times that the Coast Guard would marry itself or come work alongside or within the United States Navy. The other time is for incidents like Cuban refugees or drug interdiction to protect the U.S. Navy from violating its prohibitions from getting involved in civilian affairs or into civilian jurisdictions. The Coast Guard was brought on board as a civil service agency to engage with and to work with the civilians that they might either rescue at sea or carry on police and regulatory matters such as drug interdiction, so that the Navy would be used as a platform, a military platform, but no one in the United States Navy would be involved in the quote-unquote police matters, whether it be drug interdiction or, you know, Cuban refugees, either the rescuing of them of sea, which is a immigration issue as well. The Coast Guard now, though, is saying since 2003, it has somehow voluntarily taken on Title 10 and the Uniform Code of Military Justice, but it is not within the Department of Defense. It is not under the United States Navy, and that's the only time it's really supposed to be under Title 10 or the UCMJ. They are saying that they are operating independent of the Department of Defense, independent of the Pentagon, independent of the civilian structure of command and authority, like the civilian Secretary of the Navy or the civilian Secretary of Defense, that they are working under martial law, Title 10 in the UCMJ, military law, within the Department of Homeland Security, under the direct command and authority of the president. And that they can now administer and get involved, just like in this BP oil incident in the Gulf, that they can administer, police, regulate, and even adjudicate, and thus by adjudicating civilian affairs, make civilian law as this quote-unquote special branch of military, that posse comitatus, which was incorporated into Title 10, Title 5, Title 18, the Uniform Code of Military Justice, to prohibit any and all branches of military that are supposed to be treated uniformly. If you're a branch of military, you are barred from becoming involved in civilian affairs. They've created or constructed over a period of decades, and they've done this several times since not only the inception of the Coast Guard, but even since World War II. In the 1960s, the Coast Guard was, I believe it was in the Department of Commerce, and it was carrying on these admiralty and or military courts of civilians. The Department of Transportation was created in 1965, and the Coast Guard was then moved from the Department of Commerce into the Department of Transportation to correct this and to put them back, you know, in a civilian mode. And the Suits and Admiralty Act of 1965 was passed to wrest and take away admiralty jurisdiction from the Coast Guard and put it back into the federal district courts. Because what's going on now is the Coast Guard is not only the injured party, it's the one filing the complaints, it's the complainant. It is the citing or summoning party, the party issuing the complaint like a police officer, but these are military police officers. But it is also the party that is the investigating party. It is also the prosecuting party. And in my own situation where they're alleging that I'm a civilian, the Coast Guard is also the judge. And you have to remember, these are not real judges. These are not Article 3 members of our judiciary. These are Article 2 executive branch, quote-unquote, hearing officers. They're like police commissioners, where the administrative law judge is what they call them. They used to call them hearing officers. The administrative law judge is a lieutenant commander in the Coast Guard. So the body that they're going to decide the matter is themselves. And then the appellate body is the admiral in charge of a special branch of military that I, as a naval officer, and they're saying I'm a civilian in these proceedings, not that I'm in the Coast Guard or not that I'm in the Navy, and all of these other civilians and other people that they drag into these admiralty or military tribunal courts of the Coast Guard are put at odds and up against and have to defend ourselves against the assets of a branch of military. They're actually using JAG counsel. JAG counsel is a judge, advocate, general, military commissioned officers, you know, attorneys in the Coast Guard who are in uniform, and you wouldn't see this. There's transcripts up online at www.crossingtherubicon.org, and there's also some of the other site, the www.martiallaw911.com. And I put some of the transcripts up also at New York Indie Media Center, but they've been taken down. The site's been hit. I had about 5 or 6 articles and some of the transcripts up there. And shortly after, within a few days, the site was taken down. Whether there's any correlation to me posting this information, that's conjecture. You know, anybody can come up with their own opinion on that. But the Coast Guard, my own appeal as a quote-unquote alleged civilian who was actually trained as a naval officer on Title 10 and the UCMJ and this system, and I understand and know very well what the Coast Guard is and is supposed to be and what it's not supposed to be, my appeal sits before, and it was Commandant Admiral Thad Allen, the man who's been placed in charge of the National Incident Commander of the Coast Guard. The very same thing that's been going on within the Minerals Management Service and other agencies or bureaus or departments of the United States federal government is going on within the Coast Guard, but it's much worse. It's not just like in the Minerals Management Service where you had sex and drugs for removal of fees or fines or royalties that would be paid on oil leases or for special consideration on oil leases. This is where they have taken, and you have to understand there's numerous reasons why they're doing this. Not only because now you have a branch of military dictating what the law is, and they are dictating it. Trust me, from my own proceedings, these are not fair. These are not just. I think from my explanation, how the Coast Guard sits in almost all roles, including my own, you know, because they did not allow me any discovery whatsoever. I could not oppose these proceedings. If I was in the Coast Guard, I would be receiving not only pay, medical benefits, per diem, housing allowance, and I would not be stripped of any promotions or other rights that I would normally have, because if I were in the Coast Guard and they were bringing these proceedings against me, I would be presumed innocent. And in these proceedings, they're clearly not presuming that individuals are innocent, because they can bring individuals like myself and others into these proceedings. They've had me in these proceedings since they brought charges in March 6th of 2003 under the cover of the launching of the war in Iraq. They didn't actually, they ruled by summary decision in 2004 that I was quote-unquote medically, mentally incompetent. So you have a branch of military trying to determine that a civilian is somehow medically, you know, whistleblower retaliation. It's pretty standard, but, you know, it's pretty egregious here where you can see that it's a branch of military that I'm not in, that I've never served in, that's saying that I'm a civilian, that is trying to declare me to be medically, mentally incompetent. And one of the reasons is because of the information I'm bringing out now about what's going on with these Coast Guard proceedings, but some of the whistleblowing that had gone on before that, where I had written a letter to the Secretary of Transportation, Norm Mineta, and had tried to explain what was going on in the United States Merchant Marine and maritime industry, including even the Navy and repair yards for the Navy, where there was, you know, gross waste, fraud, and abuse on federal contracting. And in response to that, I'd actually written a letter to Congressman Duncan Hunter in San Diego as well. His son, Congressman Duncan Hunter Jr., has taken over his congressional seat. But in response, 3 days later, after I'd written the letter to Congressman Duncan Hunter, Homeland Security, through the Coast Guard, brought charges against me and charged me with, quote-unquote, being depressed. And they have prosecuted me now up until this date. I did not get a hearing. I actually got a 4-day trial at the Federal Fusion Center in Long Beach, which is the Glenn Anderson Federal Building. Even the issue of Fusion Center is something that we could talk about maybe at another time, but it is pretty important. May 20th, 21st, 22nd, and 23rd of 2008, after charges were brought in 2003, they actually held me in a hotel room for 8 months in La Jolla back in 2003 while they were prosecuting me initially. I was found in 2004 to be medically, mentally incompetent. I appealed the decision myself It was overturned and remanded, sent back to the original judge, Parlin McKenna. He's an administrative law judge with the Coast Guard. He recuses himself after it had been remanded to him, and I had already asked for or motioned for his recusal because it was clear he was going to deny me a hearing. It goes back to him, and he goes ahead and recuses himself once it goes back to him on remand, and another judge steps into his shoes, takes over the case. There's no de novo proceeding. It didn't start over from scratch. This other quote-unquote judge steps in. His name is Walter J. Brzezinski. He is a lieutenant commander, and I found this out after the fact from doing research on who he was. He's a lieutenant commander, active or retired, in the United States Coast Guard. He was a direct commissioned officer in the Coast Guard, and by this, he is conflicted. He not only he still gets paid by the Coast Guard even now, but he's a former direct commissioned officer and attorney and counsel in uniform to the Coast Guard, who is now ruling on their cases. This goes a lot deeper because you have to understand why they would want to convert, not only just to rule on and make civilian law, which is very convenient because you have a branch of military doing it and they can make up whatever law they want, but when you convert a civil service agency into a branch of military overnight, there is an enormous savings in personnel costs. And those personnel costs can be moved outside of the agency through federal contracting. So the same people that converted it from a branch of military, or I'm sorry, from a civil service agency into a branch of military, are saving millions upon millions upon millions of dollars because military personnel do not have to get vacations. They do not, well, they do to an extent, but they can play with a lot more. But they don't have to be paid overtime. They can work them 16, 18 hours a day, basically hot sheet them, work them 7 days a week and more, and they don't have to pay or provide the same things that they would to a civil servant because there's, you know, federal holidays and more. The savings is then moved out of the agency that is now a branch of military through military federal contracting, and the Coast Guard, who is now in control of the BP incident, has already put out there that they are looking to purchase submarines and more. So they're taking the money that they're saving in, you know, in personnel costs and using it to contract out to their friends. Admiral Loy was a former Coast Guard commandant. I think he was before Admiral Collins and then now Admiral Allen, who has just stepped down, but he's still the National Incident Commander. Admiral Loy set up the whole deal with the Transportation Worker Identification Card, which is a national, it's a progenitor, a precursor to a national ID. It's required by anyone and everyone who works around a U.S. port, who drives a truck, who works in the airline industry. They are funding this program. Everyone has to buy the card. It's a biometric ID card. It's $130 per person. They have to pay for it themselves out of their pocket. They're using this money to fund this program, and it's a spinoff from DARPA and everything else, and Admiral Poindexter. But they're forcing this upon transportation workers because of what happened on 9/11, supposedly. But Admiral Loy helped put this into effect when he was the Admiral of the Coast Guard, and now he's working for Lockheed Martin, the very company, the very military federal contractor that is in control of this transportation worker identification card. So you have a military federal contractor that is in control of not only just the body of information and data on all these workers, and these biometric ID cards are eventually going to include medical records and more, but you have it's in control of the military-industrial complex, of course. But Admiral Loy, after doing this in his position, much like Michael Chertoff had done when he was Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security for his own, you know, security firm afterwards, Admiral Loy set it up so that Lockheed Martin would be awarded these enormously lucrative contracts, and now he's working for them, and he's a millionaire. So there's enormous conflicts of interest and reasons why the Coast Guard, as a civil service agency, because you have to ask yourself, how do you get from the revenue cutter Marine, which is where the Coast Guard always wants to date its, you know, originations back to, which was started by Alexander Hamilton in 1791. The Revenue Cutter Marine, or the Ice Breaking Service, which is what the Revenue Cutter Marine would do when they weren't busy. They'd go up and, you know, watch the ice coming down off of the Arctic. Or the Rum Runner Service, or the Lighthouse Service, or the Bureau of Marine Inspection. All of these were civil service agencies, but now once they are combined, and this was only in 1915 in the middle of the war, there's been numerous times after that it's been made clear that the Coast Guard is and is supposed to be and continues to be a civil service agency, meaning that these people are not in the military, they're not to come under Title 10 or the UCMJ unless they're moved into the United States Navy under the Department of Defense. But now they're saying full-time, 24/7, 365, the Coast Guard is under Title 10 and the UCMJ, separate and apart from the Department of Defense, in Homeland Security, and is not only managing things like the BP, you know, oil disaster, and even blocking CBS reporters and others from going out and looking at what's going on. They are acting as an arm or an extension of the corporation, like BP, that is a foreign, and I have to point out, royal corporation.
Exactly. Okay, well, there's so much information to go through, but I think it's important to flesh that out for people like myself who've never really considered what the Coast Guard is or where it came from, the nature of the change that it's undergone in the past 10 years, because it seems to me that it's always had powers of police action and interdiction when it comes to drug running and things like that.
That's what makes it a civil service agency. It's a federal maritime police agency. The only time, and I laid those two points out, is when they either go under the Navy, that's when they come under Title 10 and the UCMJ, that's the only time. But the other time that they would actually work with the Navy, but they keep their police and regulatory powers because they're still under Title 14, not Title 10, is when they're on board for drug interdiction or dealing with civilians, because they remain, they don't go in the Navy, they remain in the Coast Guard, but they're on board as a civil service agency. It's like bringing your local sheriff on board a Navy vessel so that the local sheriff could carry on police powers.
Right. Okay, well, that makes sense to me. But so this seems to hinge on the idea that the Coast Guard is under Title 10 or is claiming to be under Title 10. Is that something that has actually been officially stated, or is that something that's de facto their actions?
No, you can go on Coast Guard's home port page, and it's .mil, you know, .military, and they're adjudicating cases for civilian mariners on there. If you also go to the Coast Guard's Wikipedia page, just type in Wikipedia and then .. Coast Guard, you can see on there all of the, how they claim we're a branch of military, but we're also a civilian police and regulatory force. And they say that they are the first responder to a natural catastrophe like Katrina as a branch of military. Admiral Allen was also involved in what happened in Katrina. He was moved into and took over parts of FEMA. They've incorporated FEMA into DHS. They've got Coast Guard or ex-Coast Guard personnel, vice admirals, and others within FEMA and other agencies, where these people in the Coast Guard really believe that they are in a branch of military, although these people who go to, like, say, the Coast Guard Academy, they don't get, or they're not required to get, a congressional appointment or senatorial appointment to their academy like we are at Kings Point or West Point or Annapolis or the Air Force Academy, and go through a Defense Investigative Services background check. Because the Coast Guard Academy is a police academy. It's not a federal military service academy. But since 2003, when they really made this push, and, you know, under the cover of not only 9/11, but the launching of war against Iraq, they flipped a proverbial and really non-existent switch, saying now that the Coast Guard is a branch of military in Homeland Security. The only problem with that is you can't have a branch of military outside the Department of Defense.
Exactly, right. So this is, so basically they're trying to straddle the two, put a foot in each camp, saying that they're military and they're civilian.
No, it's actually worse than that. This goes into the splitting, or our Department of Defense used to be called a Department of War. This is before 1946. At the end of World War II, because of the Geneva Conventions and that wars of aggression were outlawed, internationally, all nations apply because of what Germany did marching into Poland and Czechoslovakia. And those were wars of aggression. They wanted to take over the land and the people. They wanted to incorporate it into Germany. This was not, you know, push them back and keep them out of our country. It was a war of domination, a war of aggression. Our Department of War was then converted, and this is where the Uniform Code of Military Justice came from. Our Department of War was converted to the Department of Defense, and Title 10 was created, and the UCMJ was created to be uniform for all branches of the military. And what has happened since is they have tried to take the Department of Defense that we now know today and turn it back into a Department of War for carrying on wars of aggression. This is why Bush had said that, you know, former President George W. Bush had said that the Geneva Conventions don't apply, because the Geneva Conventions made wars of aggression illegal. Rather than calling them wars of aggression, they're calling them wars of preemption. It's the same thing. There's no difference. But what they've done is they've turned our Department of Defense back into a Department of War and created the Department of Homeland Security to be a defense department, a new defense department. They were originally going to call the Department of Homeland Security, they were originally going to call it the Department of Homeland Defense. So it was a new defense department, so our defense department split in two to where, whether it's John Madden or John Wooden talking about, you know, your best defense is a good, strong offense, they really believe this, that to have a strong defense, we need an offense department and a defense department. That is such a radical departure from the international law that has, for the most part, with, you know, we've still had all kinds of problems, but for the most part, kept the peace since World War II.
And for those out there who don't understand the significance of that, it's definitely not a semantic difference. It's a legal distinction that was brought in because of the Geneva Conventions.
Yes, and that was one reason why not only President George W. Walker Bush was attacking the Geneva Conventions, which meant that our own soldiers were not protected by it to a large extent, and this is where a lot of people in the military were complaining, but he also attacked the French, who are the who has been the enemy or at odds with the French for quite some time. The Germans. Remember the whole thing about American fries rather than French fries? And all the attacks against French as a country, and even the Lady Liberty and more. A lot of this was coming from the individuals and the people who are backing this, who want to have us all in a worldwide conflagration, worldwide war. And they've been pushing for this and even preparing the United States for this, much like they had done in Wilson had done in World War I and what had been carried out from World War I up until the end of World War II, in placing civilian jurisdictions and civilian authorities here in the United States under military authority. And that's why I raise the alarm bells, and I ask anyone and everyone out there who hears this interview to become active in this, to become knowledgeable in these issues, and to advocate any way that you possibly can in a peaceful manner, because this has been pushed back at least 3-4 times that I know of in the past, from 1915 up until, you know, more recently, you know, like the 1960s and stuff. These powers have been wrested and taken away from the Coast Guard repeatedly. They are now claiming that they have authority under Title 46 USC 239G, which is the Shipping Commissioners Act of 1871. Congress saw fit, because of what was happening to our own citizens here in the United States. The British were commandeering our citizens and throwing them on their naval brigs and on their ships and using them basically as indentured servants. So we created shipping commissioners under the Shipping Commissioners Act to be in all ports around the United States, to make sure that our citizens were working on board a ship, lawfully, being paid lawfully, that they were not being shanghaied, because as many, I think the numbers were, I don't know if it was 30,000 total or 30,000 Americans, were being seized by the British Empire to help run their fleets. So we have the shipping commissioners in all of the ports, and they were working with the local custom houses. These were actual Article 3 members of the independent judiciary who were basically judges on the barrelhead who would go out at payoff or sign on a not just a U.S. flagship, but even foreign flagship, to ensure that all the laws were being followed, that people on board these ships were being fed three meals a day, that they were being given sufficient water, that they were being given sufficient rest, and more. But what the Coast Guard has done, they've not only seized upon these Article 3 members of the judiciary, incorporated them, as they did with the lighthouse keepers and others, the life-saving service and more, they've incorporated these members from the Article 3 branch of government into the executive branch, Article 2, and now made them members of a branch of military. So not only have they converted judges, who are supposed to be in Article 3 judiciary, independent, they've moved them under the executive branch, under the president, under Article 2 to adjudicate, you know, disputes, but then militarize them. As in the example that I gave of Lieutenant Commander Walter J. Brzezinski, U.S. Coast Guard, retired or active duty, does not matter. He is conflicted and should not be sitting on any of these cases involving the Coast Guard. And these courts should not exist, because the Coast Guard has ships. They've actually had an incident in 1979 or 1980 where a vessel called the Blackthorn, it's a Coast Guard vessel, it ran into, or another ship ran into it. It was actually the, from everything I've studied on it, it was the Coast Guard vessel's fault because it did not give way. The Coast Guard vessel got caught up in the anchor of the other commercial vessel. This is a private commercial, you know, I think it might have been an American flag vessel. Either way, if it's American or foreign flag, doesn't matter. But it was civilian and commercial. It got caught up when the vessel was coming into port. The Coast Guard vessel got caught up in the anchor, got dragged backwards, buried the Coast Guard vessel. 23 Coast Guard members died on board the vessel. So you have an agency that is out there and can get involved in maritime disputes with other, you know, maritime actors or players. And they're deciding and investigating what happened. And in this incident, the captain of the vessel, if this happened in the Navy, he would have been court-martialed and drummed out of the Navy and probably even put in the brig. But in the Coast Guard, they did not even prosecute the individual. They, in fact, promoted him.
An inevitable result of those types of proceedings. Well, you say that the Coast Guard has attempted on a few occasions now to set up these military tribunals of civilians and has been pushed back each time. Can you tell us about some of those historical examples?
Well, one is, you know, again, not only what happened at the end of World War II, where the Coast Guard was moved into and created under Title 14, but there's a long string of Coast Guard cases from this carried on under these admiralty courts. Under 46 U.S.C. 239G, which was the recodified Shipping Commissioners Act of 1871. But then again, that what the Coast Guard is saying is that no one else is doing this, so we have to do it, and we want to be the DMV of the water. The only problem is they're not just the DMV, they're the Highway Patrol or state troopers, and they're also the court. They're taking on and seizing all jurisdiction here where it doesn't exist, and they're saying that they're doing it as a special branch of military because no one else is doing it. When in fact, like I mentioned before about the Suits and Admiralty Act of 1965, Congress knew and well understood what was going on, and they shut down these admiralty courts. And they restored, if any citizen is, say you pollute water, you've got a small boat, or say you have a commercial tanker, and you dump oil in the ocean, accidentally or intentionally, rather than having the Coast Guard bring a citation against you and bring you into federal court where it would be more appropriate because of, you know, if it happens on the Mississippi, you've got different states involved, so it becomes a federal issue. Admiralty has pretty much been seen as a federal issue. Rather than bringing them into an Article III, regular court, federal district court, that is well-equipped to handle admiralty, and it's even well-equipped to handle, you know, quote-unquote military tribunals, if a real military dispute arises between somebody in the Navy and someone in the Navy. And they've done this before, like with Lieutenant Watata. But those are the huge, it grew to such an extent that it finally got before Congress, and Congress understood the issue that, wait, we've got this branch of military, or it's saying it's a branch of military, it's saying that it comes under Title 10 and the UCMJ or military law, and it's administering all of these civilian affairs. Not only is it adjudicating civilian affairs, it is also licensing civilian mariners. And this is almost like, I could go on and give you a bunch of different case law or individual cases that the Coast Guard has proceeded on or against. But if you go to Coast Guard home port, it's if you type in Coast Guard and then home port, it'll come up with their home port page. It's .mil. And in there, you can go through and see all the administrative adjudications, and you can see all the court cases, and you can read through them, or at least the final order, and maybe some of the information from the cases. But you can go from the last 10 or 11 years, I think they're going back to like 2006 or 7, maybe a little bit more, so it might be 14, 15 years. And you can actually review a bunch of these cases. I'm not making this up. There's all these cases where this quote-unquote branch of military is bringing charges against civilian mariners. That means like a ship's captain on the Staten Island Ferry, a ship's captain on a tugboat, an engineer on a tugboat, a ship's captain or an engineer on board an oil tanker, a commercial private oil tanker, where the Coast Guard is saying it's a branch of military. It's using JAG counsel, Judge Advocate General Counsel, to prosecute complaints and or charges against civilians. And you can go on and see all the different cases, but the two examples I give that are, you know, more cumulative, like from the end of World War II, where the whole system was changed because people, including Congress, and this is where I ask people to really get their minds around this and get to Congress, get them to understand the gravity of what is going on. Because there's been a lot of people out there that have been attempting, but we've been, for want of a better mariner term, too blocked or prevented from getting this information to congressmen or senators that would act upon it. But the other time was in the 60s when the Coast Guard, to solve the problem and kind of cover it up, I guess, for want of a better way of saying it, was moved from the Department of Commerce into the Department of Transportation, and the Suits and Admiralty Act of 65 was passed. So those are two crucial times when the people have pushed back, informed Congress, and got them to move on it to shut down these admiralty courts, because the Coast Guard, and this goes into the Transportation Worker Identification Card I mentioned earlier, the Coast Guard controls the National Driver Registry. This was in response to Joseph Hazelwood. He was the captain on the Exxon Valdez. Because he had had drunk drivings, and because he was accused of being drunk when the vessel ran aground, which is not even close to the real story on everything that, you know, happened, the industry was at fault, the shipping companies were at fault, the owners of the ships were involved, Exxon, Coast Guard was involved, everybody was at fault because beacons had not been installed, the tugboats were not escorting the vessels in and out, you know, two tugs all the way in and all the way out to the sea buoy and more, like they should be. And this is another incident that's going on kind of related to BP. We have the same problem now, where after Exxon Valdez, we were supposed to have all these boom ships in all of the ports around the United States that should have been able to respond to what just happened in the Gulf, and where are they? There's enormous federal contracts that led out to have these boom ships in every port with tugs and more so that they could respond to a spill of any size imaginable. And we saw that this didn't happen. I'll leave it there and go ahead and throw it back to you.
All right. Well, the Homeport homepage for those out there who are interested is homeport.uscg.mil. So people can check that out and talk and look up some of those cases for themselves. But I guess let's bring this.
Well, but you see from that, it's .mil.
Right.
That .mil extension on a URL is reserved for the military.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So that's telling in and of itself. So let's bring this back to the proceedings against you, because I think that's one of the linchpins of this.
Real quick, James, I want to throw in, if you go to that Coast Guard Wikipedia page, you notice on there that they're also saying that they're not only the only branch of military that's not bound by Title 10 and the UCMJ, even though they come under it, they don't come under the same prohibitions as the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines. They're the only branch of military that can carry their service-issued weapons home with them.
And why is that?
They're saying that it's for self-defense, because and that's crazy. And it's a bad precedent, because if the Coast Guard can then do it, then all the other four branches of military will be allowed to do it as well. And that's further encroachment of, you know, like I say, crossing the Rubicon, where you've got the military, you know, being pulled off of their reservation in their federal, you know, military base, which is, you know, like a reservation, federal reservation for the military. When they leave that base, they're supposed to be citizens again. They're supposed to be civilians again. They're not supposed to be taking weapons, whether they be tanks or a judge's gavel, off of that base and applying them to civilians.
That's exactly right. And yet that's happening. So tell us some of the details about the proceedings against yourself.
Well, they brought the charges, as I mentioned, in 2003. I guess they had been investigating me since 2001, 2002, not only for my letters to Congressman Duncan Hunter and others. And I've tried. I've gone to, in all of this, I've gone to Lou Dobbs, Tom Hartman, Mike Malloy, Randy Rhodes, 60 Minutes, you name it. Everybody and their mother on one side, whether they're in the mainstream or alternative media, to try to get this information out, and no one will cover it. But they brought charges against me in 2003. I had actually not only filed letters, you know, complaints with the Secretary of Transportation and others, but I ended up filing civil complaints in federal district court, formal civil complaints, which is a whistleblower. It's the most refined and formal form of whistleblowing we have. When you file a formal civil complaint, this was against two of the shipping companies. It would have been expanded to all of the shipping companies and the quote-unquote labor union. A lot of these companies and the union have been around since the late 1800s. They know the system very well, and they're very well represented, not only in Congress, but in the courts as well. But because I sued two of the shipping companies, American President Lines, which is associated with Patriot Holdings, and also American Ship Management, and an umbrella of corporations, including Neptune Orient Lines, which was what APL was sold to in 1997 by the work of the first president, George Herbert Walker Bush, and Andrew Card, who was the Secretary of Transportation. They worked to sell American President Lines, which is a U.S. Treasury asset built by U.S. taxpayer subsidies, into the premier American flag shipping company. They used to name all their ships, you know, after American presidents. They were sold in 1997 to many of these players and others in Singapore, acting in conjunction with them in the Singaporean government and in private interests, to sell this large U.S. Treasury asset, basically, as a shipping company, as a private shipping company, but it was built and even maintained by U.S. taxpayer subsidies to offset the difference between, you know, flying the Chinese flag versus flying the American flag. We have things like the Constitution and Bill of Rights that are oftentimes a little bit more costly than things that, and the way they're run in China. But American President Lines was then owned by Neptune Orient Lines, a majority stake owned and controlled by the Singaporean government. I sued APL, ASM, and NOL, and Matson, which is a shipping company that operates between Hawaii and the West Coast predominantly, and has for the last 100 years or more. And my Federal Officers Association, or they call it a union, it's really not, called the Marine Engineers Beneficial Association, for violation of our federal contracts. And this was in the lead up not only to just before 9/11, but then after 9/11, and just prior to and in the lead up to the launching of the war. It goes into federal contracting violations, or what eventually becomes war profiteering. Because I sued these two shipping companies and the union, they worked together, and they had an individual named Archie Morgan IV, who's related to J.P. Morgan, you know, of infamy, and J.P. Morgan Jr., who signed the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. But Archie Morgan IV is connected to the World Trade Center, World Trade Center 1 in Long Beach. They are a tenant there. They prosecuted me at the Federal Fusion Center at Glen Anderson up in Long Beach, which is next to the World Trade Center in Long Beach, California. But Archie Morgan IV wrote a letter to the Coast Guard, Department of Homeland Security, to get them to investigate me, who was a civil complainant against them in federal district court. They filed charges against me in 2003, the Coast Guard did, Homeland Security, as a counter-complaint to quash my civil complaints against these federal contractors who, you know, provide services to the United States taxpayer, to quash the civil complaints, pull me out of civil court as a civil litigant, bring me into a military tribunal of the Coast Guard, and then have the matter adjudicated there in a military tribunal where the charges against me were to prove that I was medically, mentally incompetent.
Absolutely, just incredible and unbelievable, the actions that were taken against you. So that started in 2003, and I understand it's still ongoing. So tell us about what's happened over the past 7 years in this case.
Well, my appeal sits before the U.S. Coast Guard Commandant, who was Thad Allen, who's just retired, stepped down. But what's striking about that is that he's retained his uniform, and he's now the National Incident Commander, and I don't even know what he is the commander of, other than the BP oil disaster, but what is the National Incident Command? And this gets into, if you go to the Coast Guard's Wikipedia page and look up the, you know, basically the, they are the first responder, and he has, this kind of goes to what happened under President Bush, the second President Bush, with appointing, it was a CIA director who was an admiral in the Army, or not an admiral in the, no, he was a general in the Army, and I'm trying to think of his name, but they basically appointed him to be head of the CIA and said, oh, by the way, you can keep your uniform. So they're taking people out of active duty military and then making them civilians in charge, like a director of an agency, and then saying you can keep your, you know, military uniform. But now they're taking someone like the Coast Guard Commandant, who's head of this newfound branch of military, letting him step down and retire, get his pension, and now become the head, still as an admiral somehow and still wearing his uniform, in charge of the National Incident Command. But if my appeal was before him, he's now stepped down, so it's now been passed over to Admiral Papp, who is taking over the position as Coast Guard Commandant. The charges were brought in 2003 for events that allegedly occurred in 2000, 2001, 2002. Some of the events, and this goes to the individual who brought the charges against me, it was Lieutenant Christopher Triboulet at the time, U.S. Coast Guard. I tried to stop an explosion on board a government vessel. Think about what just happened on a BP oil rig. And I tried to stop dumping of hazardous materials on the same vessel, a Maritime Administration vessel called the SS Comet. To cover this up, they fired me. They promoted, there actually was, I stepped back and said I would not carry out the orders to light off the boiler, which I was in charge of. They go ahead and order the individual who was a junior officer to me to light off the boiler. This is in the United States Merchant Marine, not in the United States Navy. But on there, it's still my naval commission is tied to my duties on board. But the individual who was ordered to carry out my what I refused to do was not a graduate of Kings Point. He was not a reserve naval officer. He's just a guy who was working in the Merchant Marine, worked his way up. and he did what he was told to do. He did not have the wherewithal to say, no, I'm not going to do it, and knew that, you know, the law and the federal contracts stood behind me on this issue, although not the, you know, enforcement or practice of them. Sure enough, there was an explosion, a flashback, and he got burned. They fired me or terminated me and promoted the guy that got burned that did what he was told and promoted him to my position. I filed a grievance in this to the union, and this is one of the reasons the union was sued. The Coast Guard officer who started to or took over this case or was reassigned to it, there was originally a reservist, Lieutenant Kevin Fong, I think was his name. Lieutenant Christopher Tribolet comes in, and rather than properly investigate this, and he actually falsified medical records, turned the burns, which, you know, were fairly severe. He had blisters on his neck. It was all red. They took him to the hospital right away. There should have been a safety stand down. There was. None of this was reported. The company didn't even file a mandatory report about the incident to the Coast Guard, as they're required to do. The Coast Guard later allowed them, this is like years later, allowed them to correct that and file their report years later. The Coast Guard, rather than investigating and exonerating me for doing the right thing and saying, look, you guys need to listen when a personnel on board, an officer or even a crew member, steps forward and has the wherewithal to say, no, I'm not going to carry out the command, you need to stop and figure out why, you know, and correct the issue and maybe listen to them, because they might have differing or, you know, not necessarily better experience, but just different experience. Instead, Lieutenant Commander Christopher Tribolet comes in and covers this incident up. This is the same company with Archie Morgan, ASM, APL, one of the companies that was sued. They not only handle government contracts, but they also do private commercial work as well. They use their assets and resources, along with Matson, the other shipping company, and the union, and in conjunction with the Coast Guard, to cover this up. They carried on a series of retaliations after this. Matson fired me upon the death of my father. This is one of the reasons why they've come in and are trying to, quote-unquote, prove somehow and bring up all the issues surrounding the death of my father that I'm, quote-unquote, being depressed. They have carried out one retaliation after another, to the point on a vessel called the APL Jackson. They were actually playing with the alarms on board the vessel when I had the watch so that I would not get proper sleep, and transferring fuel oil and doing all kinds of other stuff, which, you know, it goes to, if people on board who are supposed to be professionals, engineers, mates, who are licensed by the Coast Guard, are playing these kind of games and it can't be properly investigated by the Coast Guard, much like the MMS, Minerals Management Service, these powers need to be wrested away from the Coast Guard, because, A, you shouldn't have a branch of military investigating civilian affairs. They're enforcing personnel matters for civilians using a branch of military to do it. One of the issues that I raised, not only in the federal lawsuits, but throughout this and filing grievances and more, we are supposed to have, as part of our onboard systems, just like a relating to like the BP oil spill, we have equipment on board so that we can take the water from the bilge mixed with oily, you know, drippings that come off of the engines, whether they be steam turbines or diesels or fuel oil or anything else, and we can first decant it, put it in a slop tank, let the water separate out from the oil, which will float on top. Then we have equipment on board called an oily water separator. You probably heard about this through conversations with, Kevin Costner, with the equipment that he's trying to sell or has sold to the federal government. These oily water separators separate the oil out of the water mixture, trying to basically just pump water overboard and no oil. And they have a real tight tolerance of 15 parts per million. As soon as it gets higher than 15 parts per million, it shuts down the equipment, stops the discharge of water overboard, and recycles it back to the tank. Well, this is the issue is other than having safety issues like that that we can bring up on board, or even food, like feeding. Like on some of these ships, like the Comet, we were getting fed three meals a day when we were getting fed two meals a day when we're supposed to be getting fed three meals a day. So they were being provided, and it was a contractual issue, they were actually being provided money by the U.S. taxpayers to offset the price differential in running and having an American flagged ship with American crew. And this, you probably heard with the BP stuff, the Jones Act has been brought up, which requires that any marine transport between two U.S. ports goes by an American flag, American built, and American crewed ship. That's to keep jobs here in the United States, but also to have them for civil defense in the event of, like, say, Katrina or something like the BP oil disaster, so that we have these assets here in our country and we control them under our flag, but also to have a large majority of our cargo carried on American flag ships, so that we are benefiting from transporting our international cargo into and out of the United States on American flag vessels. One of these shipboard systems, like the oil water separator and other equipment on board, like the main engines or gears or anything else, we have a very complex contract, and one of the things in there as a line item is a grievance and arbitration process. So that if you have a complaint about safety, about how the ship is being run, about waste, fraud, and abuse, about the food program, about overtime, about penalty time, about leave, or anything else, and this is why I bring up the issues of converting a civil service agency into a branch of military, you strip all those things out of it as costs, and this is why I well understand that it is much more costly to pay a civil servant than somebody who is in a branch of military. The core issue to all of this, though, is we have a system of industrial due process. It's a grievance and arbitration process called the Licensed Personnel Board. There's supposed to be five arbitration members on it, two picked by the employers and all their, you know, different shipping companies, two picked by the union or all the employees, and one who sits as the chair as a neutral third to settle and decide any matters that are deadlocked, and also to sit on it to keep things peaceful and, you know, civil. Well, this core system that allows us access to any and all of our other rights, whether it be overtime, penalty time, food, safety, or anything else, has been stripped from the industry entirely. And this is what I went into federal district court to correct, and went after Matson and also American President Lines, because not only are a lot of these shipping companies no longer American-owned or American-controlled, some don't even fly American flag anymore, but they hire American crew to an extent. Usually it's just the officers. And that's how Archie Morgan IV, a guy who went to my academy, actually raised his license in levels. He sailed on foreign flag vessels as an engineer. But this core system, it's almost like you woke up one morning and the Ninth Circuit wasn't there. It's almost like you woke up one morning and the Supreme Court wasn't there. This industrial system of due process that is supposed to handle the very smallest grievance, from penalty time for one engineer to penalty time for all engineers who are not getting paid because one employer has decided to, you know, nix that out of the contract for whatever reason, which is unfair to all other employers because they're paying it and abiding by the contract, but this other employer is cheating. And cheating not only the employees, but they're cheating the industry and hurting, and it goes into, you know, unfair competition. They're hurting all of the other players in the industry, all the other shipping companies or employers. Or if it's to consider more important matters of civil defense or national security, to where, say, we've got a captain who is helping smuggle, and this happens, this has actually happened on both American flag and foreign flag vessels, smuggling foreigners into the United States through containers, having the containers loaded with 30, 40 foreigners, where they're getting paid for bringing these foreigners in, who are then, you know, put to work in the fields or sex industry or wherever, or they're just paying as a, you know, almost like friends to the south do, Mexicans, in trying to get across the border. They pay the what do they call them, the coyotes or whatever, the to bring them across, and they pay them $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 per person to make it into the United States for, you know, to hopefully get a foot into the United States and start a new life. And people are doing this from other countries who they can't come across the Mexican border. They are doing it in container ships from the Far East. So if you come across a situation like that, and if you can't go to the captain, and you don't know who he's connected to, this independent panel, the Licensed Personnel Board, is supposed to hear grievances like that as well. And right now in the United States Merchant Marine, and this is one of the very core issues, and there's a lot more than that, like the, like I mentioned, the feeding on board some of these ships, where we're supposed to be fed 3 meals a day, and we're being fed 2 instead. They've done away with, and they're paid by the United States to not only build this arbitration system that is a cost borne by industry, to have the industry correct their own problems internally to improve the industry, to protect the industry, but then also not to limit or preclude the rights of an individual if they see fit to get into court. But what they've done is they've set up these, they're forcing more and more people into arbitration, like even in our own industry as federal maritime officers, into arbitration that doesn't even exist. So if you have a complaint, what they have to do, like they've done with me, is they have to somehow prove, and they will go after you, and they're using the complaint system as a targeting system for anyone who might complain about internal corruptions.
Exactly. So it's a retaliation against people who are attempting to blow the whistle. So so bringing this back...
But that's very scary, because then they've taken away the very system. And if you look at, and some of the players involved in my own situation, like Elaine Kaplan from the Office of Special Counsel, and I've had to study all this stuff and who these people are and where they came from. A guy named Alex Kaczynski was the chief counsel for the Office of Special Counsel for the Merit Systems Protection Board. He was booted from his position, censured by 43 senators, because he was teaching people how to break the law, how to get around the Whistleblower Protection Act, not only in corporations and agencies and departments of the federal government. He gets censured, kicked from his position. He should never have been able to serve in either state or federal government or the military, because he was censured by the Senate, the United States Senate, for breaking the law. He's now on top of the Ninth Circuit, and he has his signature on my documents. So these very same people that are carrying on the corruption, say, in one agency or department or even corporation, are, once they're found out, because we are not doing our due diligence and keeping our eye on them, they are finding themselves somewhere else with oftentimes even more power. Alex Kaczynski is sitting on top of, proverbially, the Ninth Circuit. He has been instrumental. They've tried to break up the Ninth Circuit in the last few years. It's been going on longer than that. But he's been instrumental in keeping it together as this unwieldy behemoth. And other people like Carol C. Lamb, who was one of the 8 U.S. attorneys that was fired by Bush, 8 or 9 U.S. attorneys, she wasn't fired because she was, you know, trying to go up against the Bush administration. She was actually doing what she was told. She was given cover to remove herself from the U.S. Attorney's Office and go work for Qualcomm, where she's a corporate lawyer now. She has her signature on my documents as well from Federal District Court in San Diego. So I'm up against some very influential, I mean, these people are enormously powerful in their own right. They are puppets for people who are much more powerful than them, and they have military tribunal as an alleged civilian.
So in this tribunal, I understand that they have attempted to force medical, examination of
psychological.
You? Right.
Yeah, without any, like, they don't want to do a CAT scan. They don't want to take blood. They don't want to do any kind of biochemistry or see if there's, like, a tumor growing in my brain. They want to force me under an unrecorded, we tried to go in, if you go on and check out some of the URLs that I posted, sent you, and I think you're going to post and put up, There's one in there about the order that was put out in 2006. There's a footnote at the bottom of page 2 where I wanted my attorney and a videographer to be there where they were going to carry on this quote-unquote psychological examination. They wouldn't allow it. The psychiatrist or psychologist wouldn't allow it. They did not want it to be on the record. That is an ex parte proceeding. They're using hearsay, and this is allowable in these proceedings somehow, to where they've done this. They've actually had the Coast Guard. They didn't even have any personnel come in and testify saying that I heard myself, Mr. Schein, say this. The Coast Guard is saying that they've heard people say that they heard people say that they said that I said that if courts don't work, that's what guns are for. I've never said that. They never even actually had anyone come into the court and say that. The Coast Guard was allowed to put that in the record themselves and say that. They've tried to tie me to Timothy McVeigh. They tried to force me under the psychological examinations prior to any actual hearing on the merits. They've forbade me from actually being heard on the record. If you go review, there's transcripts. It's about 1,000 pages from the May 20th, 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, 2008 proceedings, where the Coast Guard, through redirection and personal attacks, forbids me. I was not allowed any discovery, so I couldn't get any records or information from the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard used the lieutenant who was the citing or summoning party or complainant, Lieutenant Christopher Tribole. In the meantime, while they had held on to me from 2003 up into, 2007, 2008, he goes away to law school at Hastings, gets his law degree, comes back, goes into the JAG program for the Coast Guard, becomes a JAG officer, gets promoted to lieutenant commander, takes back over my case as the prosecution, and in a rush to judgment that's stretched out over years because they just keep trying to get at the same thing, they have repeatedly tried to force me under an unrecorded psychological examination that they could use a psychologist or psychiatrist to report upon what I did or said or how I acted and use this as hearsay to have me declared medically, mentally incompetent.
But to be clear, that psychological assessment has not actually taken place.
Well, no, actually, they've tried every way imaginable to get around this. Because I don't want to say I'm smart and sound, arrogant, but I know my rights, and I know due process, and I know what the presumption of innocence means. I know how our system is set up and how it's supposed to work. They brought in a captain from the Coast Guard, a Captain Arthur French, and this is in the transcripts as well. He's a U.S. Coast Guard officer in uniform, a military commissioned officer, allegedly, supposedly, that's what they're claiming. I'm saying they're supposed to be a civil service agency. But the problem is that even if they are a civil service police agency, they're not supposed to be carrying on these proceedings. That's like a lieutenant, an investigator, or detectives from the LAPD grabbing you, bringing you in, putting one of their detectives in charge as a judge. And they set this up as a mock trial. It looked like a real trial. The judge was wearing black. He's in the Coast Guard. The prosecutor is at one table. I'm at the other. I'm defending myself, even though I'm somehow accused of and proven by them several times to be medically, mentally incompetent. But this Coast Guard captain, Arthur C. French, MD, and he's not a real medical doctor. He's a military doctor. It's a little bit different. But they're pumping out these military doctors and making them look as if they're real doctors, just to send them out under this whole healthcare thing that's going on. Captain Arthur French comes in, sits in the first day of the proceedings on May 20th, 2008, and by the way that I defend myself in court, he does a diagnosis of me, although I've not asked him to, although I've not paid him to, although I have not allowed him to review any of my medical records, and although I'm not in the Coast Guard. They're saying I'm a civilian, not even a naval officer. Even if I was a naval officer and they're saying I'm a naval officer, that also precludes them because I have to be in the Coast Guard for the Coast Guard to bring charges against me. That's how it's supposed to work, whether they're civilian or a branch of military. They're taking what was intended for them, which is the Administrative Procedure Act, Title 5, It was intended for them to carry on any internal remedial proceedings for any of their own personnel. Now that they've converted themselves from a civil service agency, they no longer need Title V or the APA for themselves. They're using Title X and the UCMJ for internal purposes. They've taken it on voluntarily. And they're now trying to use Title V and the APA to administer civilian affairs, although they all come under Title X and the UCMJ, which bars them from doing that. Even Title V, which is the Administrative Procedure Act, bars them in there from doing that as well. But they use Captain Arthur French, this Coast Guard doctor, to sit in the proceedings, take notes. I asked him to be recused and to, well, not only just be recused, but also removed from the room so that his testimony would not be affected by what he saw in court. And instead, they let him stay in. And of course, he testified as to what he saw in court to try to have me found guilty.
That's just absolutely incredible, absolutely unbelievable.
But it shows you how desperate they are to have me proven to be crazy, for want of a better word, because this gets right down to the issue. The National Defense Industries Association, a 1,365-member association of military federal contractors, awarded Admiral Allen, Coast Guard Commandant Admiral Allen, who's stepping down now, an award. Most people don't realize that this award, although it's given for whatever reason they say it was given for converting a civil service agency into a branch of military overnight in 2003 under the cover of the war in Iraq, so that these 1,365 members of this association could contract to the Coast Guard for submarines. Even this whole thing with BP, they're going to use it as an excuse saying, well, you know, we're not well equipped to monitor this or regulate this or enforce this. We need submarines.
Right, exactly. So
You don't want the Coast Guard having submarines.
So this is a question of creeping militarization, and what we're seeing is the precedent-setting stage where things like the military tribunals against civilians are being set now as a precedent for future actions. So what can people do to combat this creeping militarism?
Well, I give a perfect example, and it was from a case in 1950. It was brought to the Supreme Court in 1956 under Eisenhower initially. And the Supreme Court said, fine, we don't have a problem with you carrying on military tribunals of civilians here in the United States. And this was carried out against, you can look it up online, and I would say read the second time that it was brought before the Supreme Court in 1957. But it's Reed, R-E-I-D versus Covert. And this is all briefed in all of my appeals to the Coast Guard and in these proceedings, you know, preventing them every single way I can imagine from doing what they're doing, because it is unlawful in at least 100 ways. But this U.S. Supreme Court case precedence is controlling in this matter as well. It was a woman who was the wife of a service member in the United States military who was serving in England. Her husband was in the military. She was not. She's a civilian. But she's over in England accompanying him on duty. He was murdered. She was accused of the murder. The military charged and prosecuted her within a military tribunal, found her guilty, basically drove her mad because they just abused the heck out of her. And trust me, these guys can abuse you like you would not believe. They've been carrying on various forms of psychological warfare against myself, and I'm sure they did the same thing against her. I mean, when you think you're a citizen, you have certain rights, and you're stripped from, you know, they're all stripped from you, either one by one or collectively, it has a definite effect upon you. It's very disquieting. Her father, this Mrs. Reed, stepped in and on her behalf, because he loved his daughter. And this is an individual, one person. That's all it took to really drive this and get it going. He stepped in and got to the Attorney General and to the Solicitor General. People don't realize how important the Solicitor General is as a position. If you looked at Ted Olson, who was appointed Solicitor General by George W. Bush because he represented Bush against Gore at the Supreme Court, Ted Olson's law firm, Gibson, Dunn, and Crutcher, is also one of the law firms that's involved in my own affairs, where they were representing Matson, the shipping company. So this is all a sordid web of these individuals and families, and that's why I've really gotten into lineage and a lot of other issues, and, you know, I would even dare say royalty and or our former, you know, lords in England and the quote-unquote United Kingdom. And I know you cover this on your program as well, about New World Order. And I would ask that people start to, well, no, but people start looking at that issue and that they call it what it is. It is not some new concept via, you know, L. Ron Hubbard and Newspeak or anything else. This is a new reinvigoration of the United Kingdom. You hear people talk about neo-feudalism, feudalism. I just got kicked off of Mike Malloy's forums. He's a radio show host, for bringing up that Canada is a constitutional monarchy. The guy controlling the forums is from Canada. He took offense and said that I was intolerant to, I would say I don't like monarchists. I don't believe in kingdoms on this earth. I don't believe in royalty. I believe it is a, that's a totally different issue. But back to the Coast Guard, everything that they are doing, if you go to that Coast Guard Wikipedia page and look at the number of things, like even the fact that they're carrying their, that they're the only branch of military that can carry their service-issued weapons home, makes them special. They're the only branch of military that can administer civilian affairs. That makes them very special. It's very unconstitutional, but what I would ask is that people contact your senators, contact your congresspersons, get involved and better informed than even I on this issue, and prove and show that no matter what Title 14 says, and no matter, well, Title 10 is, you know, supportive, but Ex parte Milligan, all of these case laws like Reed versus Covert, what happened in Reed versus Covert, which I was, mentioning, initially in 1956, the Supreme Court held that it was fine for the military to carry on this military tribunal. Father gets involved, he gets the Attorney General and the Solicitor General, who is considered the U.S., you know, the 10th Supreme U.S. Court Justice. He's not really, but by de facto, he gets to decide when, where, and how to defend the U.S. Constitution. The Attorney General works for him in that regard. The Solicitor General is such an important position. They go ahead and advocate on behalf of Mrs. Reed and get and advocate for a rehearing of the matter in 1957. In 1957, the U.S. Supreme Court, in a majority opinion written by Hugo Black, and this is an enormously important decision because it goes into NAFTA and all of these other international agreements, even status of forces agreements or SOFAs, where we come into agreements with countries and, you know, if our military is there, we come into a an agreement, our government and their government, on what the rules of, and codes of conduct are. Reed versus Covert from 1957, in this decision, went all the way back to the Magna Carta of 1215 AD and bringing it over not only in English common law, but in numerous other ways in this decision, brilliant decision by Hugo Black, outlawed why we are not supposed to have military tribunals of civilians here in the United States. And one of the comments was, A, we're not supposed to have a competing system of courts from underneath the executive branch. We're supposed to be an independent judiciary. But the other was that at that time, and remember, this is 1950s, mid, 1955, 56 into 57, that we have planes, trains, automobiles, even back then, and there is no reason, no excuse, that an individual cannot be brought back to and tried in our regular proper court system where their rights are protected. Whether they're an American citizen, a foreign national, or anyone else, they should all, because as we chip away and we say, and this goes into, you know, why they're inalienable rights, you're not supposed to say that, well, you don't get it because you're a Mexican or you're not a American or you're not a national, you're not a legal resident or whatever. Anyone that is in our country that comes under our system is supposed to be provided the very same rights. That's what we fought for. That's what we've been fighting for several hundred years, so that we extend the same rights, same benefits, and same considerations that we would expect ourselves to anyone and everyone else that we come in contact with. And this is why I have a huge problem with what's going on in Guantanamo or Gitmo, because they've actually gone on a divergent course here to where Gitmo is being prosecuted in military tribunals, the detainees, and then they're also being tried in federal district court. And all that does, we're supposed to have a the reason for the federal system is to have a more homogenous system of laws to where the best laws rise to the top from all the various different states and jurisdictions. But here we're confusing things from the get-go. And they had a very easy decision to say, no, we want to provide these individuals, because a lot of these people were just farmers who were, you know, outed by their neighbors who wanted their property and their women, and paid $5,000 for doing so, who ended up in Guantanamo Bay. A lot of these prisoners were, you know, released by George W. Bush under his presidency, not even under Obama's. But what is going on now? I am a U.S. citizen. I'm a graduate of a U.S. military academy. And I'm not saying I'm important or special, but no American citizen, and this is the same, I would say, for any foreign national, is supposed to come under a military tribunal. And Reed versus Covert from 1957 made this point very clear from the United States Supreme Court, and it is still controlling. But the individuals who are involved, like Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher, Ted Olson, American President Alliance, Mattson, and other enormous players who are involved in my own situation, wish to overturn that. And they're using the Coast Guard as one of their biggest instruments to push this through. They tried pushing through H.R. 1955 and S.B. 1959, Military Commissions Act, a rider to the Warner Defense Authorization Bill, and more, to try to place, just like in Reconstruction under the First Civil War, to place civilians under military authority, under military jurisdiction. And now they've gotten away with it with the Coast Guard, with this, you know, the Military Commissions Act, and a lot of that stuff has all been pushed back. Guantanamo detainees have more rights. They have rights to counsel. They are being fed, provided medical benefits. You know, it may not be the best of circumstances. But another example, like Lieutenant Watada, who fought his orders to turn to in Iraq. He felt it was an unjust war. He said he'd serve in Afghanistan. And somebody should have been bright and made a command decision and said, look, fine, serve him, send him to Afghanistan. We don't have the time or the money to make this a federal issue. The guy's willing to serve, send him there, and make sure he gets protected so that people don't take pot shots at him because he wouldn't go to Iraq. Instead, they want to make a federal case out of it. So they prosecute him for not turning to, and this is a case I would ask people to go research. Lieutenant Watada, you know, had to pay the price and had to been drumrolled out of the military. It's Lieutenant Watada. He's in the U.S. military, or was. He was prosecuted for not turning to, for a troop movement. And it ended up in federal court. And they even tried to carry on a double jeopardy of him and prosecute him twice within the same military tribunal, because the first one was nullified. But the thing is, and that's important, in these proceedings, like in my own, I am not like Lieutenant Watada, to where Lieutenant Watada was paid his pay. He did not lose his rank. He was presumed innocent. He continued to get per diem, housing allowances, pay. He actually got JAG counsel and or private legal counsel, and I am getting none of those. And any and all other civilians who come into these proceedings who do not know or understand what they really are aren't getting that either. And the Coast Guard, through economic oppression, just using military assets to overcome an individual, is by defect and default making civilian law. They're actually getting people to sign what are called these settlement agreements in advance of and in lieu of actually going into a hearing. And I demanded the hearing. I would not sign the settlement agreement. It was basically admitting to jurisdiction, admitting that I was, you know, crazy or whatever. But the Coast Guard is doing this, using these settlement agreements to create jurisdiction where there is none. So they're getting citizens and using a branch of military to get these citizens to sign these settlement agreements, almost as if they were a petition to get something, you know, on a referendum for voting. And by this abdicating over jurisdiction and thus proceeding on under common law, not by an act of Congress. In fact, in opposition to numerous acts of Congress that have stripped the Coast Guard repeatedly of these admiralty courts.
Well, Lieutenant Chang, you urge people to get informed about this issue, and I would wholeheartedly agree, because obviously this is an extremely important issue and goes straight to the idea of what martial law is and how it's being implemented right now. So, of course, I would like to let the listeners know that there is a documentation list for this interview with a number of links that Lieutenant Chang has been kind enough to provide for us, but are there any other sources that you'd like people to direct people to, or any things that you'd like them to check out specifically?
I really need help. I've been enduring as a civil, I wouldn't wish this upon anyone. And I've been sticking up and fighting because I know and well understand what is going on and what is being attempted. And I understand not only from how it's affected me personally, but how that as it grows and more people are enveloped into this system, that the individuals who are getting away with these people, you would not believe Captain Arthur French in these proceedings. I never met the guy. Very vindictive, angry. I mean, you could see blood in his eyes. This guy was crazy. And these are the kind of people that are running these proceedings now. They will get worse with time. And as they are empowered, the other point on Captain Arthur French is now he is retired two weeks after this proceeding in May of 2008. He has now left the Coast Guard and is now working in the Veterans Administration. And if you talk about a Dr. Kevorkian, this guy is he. He will injure and probably kill more people from what I saw him do in those proceedings against me, where he abused his medical. I never met the guy. Never talked to him. He didn't even talk to any doctors or whatever. He formed his own opinion off of what the Coast Guard had said to about me in the proceedings and how I responded. I didn't get up. I didn't rant, rave. I kept my cool and I objected. Everything and anything that was either factual or substantive or procedurally wrong in the proceedings, I simply stood up and objected. And they wanted this to appear, although it was supposed to be just a simple hearing, they wanted it to appear as if I was being disruptive in just a simple, a casual administrative proceeding, when they actually set it up as a mock court. Where I was on one side, Coast Guard was on the other, they used JAG counsel to do it, the judge is up there. The judge actually had a representative of the chief administrative law judge from the Coast Guard there sitting next to him, which is a conflict of interest because the chief administrative law judge is not supposed to have any input or feedback or whatever, anything, or a representative in the courtroom, especially sitting next to the judge, acting as his counsel, and he was an attorney as well, and Lieutenant Commander Brzezinski was also an attorney. But because it goes to conflict of interest, another one. And I ask people to not only go to the websites, the www.crossingtherubicon.org, www.martiallaw.com, listen to this interview, hopefully, of course, and if they've gotten to this by now, it's a little redundant. But also, I have a radio program, and I've got TV program videos that I had put out. I was doing on cable news up in at Time Warner up in Santa Monica and Burbank. I was doing half-hour shows, and I put a bunch of them up there on the Internet, and they're searchable. But I also have a radio program on republicbroadcasting.org. You can find it on the website or the Internet at www.republicbroadcasting.org. It's actually Republic Broadcasting Network. My program is called In the Zone, and I do this program for free. I don't get paid. I mean, how I've survived to this point to try to warn and inform people, I don't know. I've done everything and anything to stay up to this point. But I've also seen case precedents from the Coast Guard where what they do is they hold on to people within their jurisdiction indefinitely, and this goes to administrative renditions and more, pulling people into black sites. And you can do this virtually. You don't have to do it physically. If you steal somebody's legal rights, you are virtually detaining them. If you take their passport or whatever, sure, they're free to roam, but how far? the Coast Guard is holding and detaining me, and I've seen from precedents in the 50s where the Coast Guard held on to people until they died, and then they dismissed the case so that no one was the wiser as to what they were doing and how they were doing it.
So you were certainly in some serious jeopardy here, and people need to...
Yes, and
well, I just want to say people need to support you and obviously bring attention to this issue itself in particular, but we are running out of time, so I guess are there any final thoughts that you'd like to leave people with today?
Any questions or anything from you? Or
they
can contact...
I would like to get your take on a number of things, including, of course, the Coast Guard's response in the BP oil spill and many other issues that would take, I think, much too long to really flesh out at this point. But I certainly hope we can have you back on in the program in the future to talk about some of these issues.
Well, I would appreciate any and all help, and even making this a pressing issue. You saw what happened with the woman in the Department, or not the Department of Agriculture, but the woman who was just fired because of that video.
Right, the USDA.
Right.
Ms. Sherrod?
Yeah, exactly. Mine is, you know, you saw how just something that simple and a knee-jerk reaction, she should have been afforded administrative rights to where there was a system of due process, like the Merit Systems Protection Board, or other means to where you can't just fire her without due process. There has to be a proceeding. She's been in service for, you know, decades. This is the problem where whether you're working, and this is something that was set up under, you know, George, it even goes back to George Herbert Walker Bush, they're getting rid of all of these systems that were set up under Roosevelt that were, or they're corrupting them and basically having them protect the corporations and or industry and not the employees or individuals or citizens. All of these administrative systems of due process, whether they be executive branch or arbitration, like one example, and I'll end on this, Ronald Reagan in the 1979, I believe, he went and fired 13,500 professional air traffic controllers. He used military air traffic controllers in uniform, similar to my own situation, but they're using this as a court instead. But Reagan used military air traffic controllers to pink slip fire 13,500 civilians when his job is well-defined. He's supposed to bring in a federal mediator, get the people back to work, find out what's going on, what the disputes are, resolve it, maintain the status quo, and get things moving forward, not use the military in a very covert and subtle way, but still using the military air traffic controllers, to break up a union and fire 13,500 fellow civilians. But the very same thing that went on in PATCO is going on here, but it's far worse because they've created this court system. And I would ask that people get a little more well-versed on a lot of these issues, and I've got a lot of stuff out on the internet, but a lot of this is also being removed off of the internet, and anything that people can do to bring this issue and even my own issue and my own plight to light, I would very much appreciate.
All right, excellent. Well, I certainly hope that the listeners have taken that to heart, and I imagine if they've gotten to this point of the interview, they understand the gravity of what's going on here. So certainly we'll keep an eye on this, and we'll hopefully hear back from you again in the future. I'd love to have you back on the program, but we are out of time. So Lieutenant Eric Schein, martiallaw911.com, and crossingtherubicon.org, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you, James. Appreciate it. Peace.